Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here. Catch all seven rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Lowe's knows home improvement. Lowe's, official sponsor for the 2024 NFL Draft.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. This is Robert Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick, and we're back with part two of our series on tears. We figured out by today this is definitely going to be at least three parts because there's just so much. There, you know, the tears make an ocean, and they don't stop coming. So there will be at least one more.
Yeah, there's almost too much because sometimes we look into things and we're like, okay, well, what's the mythological ramifications of this? Are there any treatments of this in mythology or religion? And with something like tears, the answer is yes. Every religion, every mythology, mm-hmm. pretty much, you know? So it's easy to get lost sort of just chasing some of these ideas down and then trying to figure out which ones are worth talking about, which ones are not. And then, of course, from the scientific point of view, we've already rolled through, I think, some of the science of tears, and we have a bit more to cover today.
Well, we've got a lot more to cover on the science of tears. So in the last episode, we talked some about some of the basic uncontroversial biological facts about tears, you know, like basal tears and reflex tears, what they're made of and how they're secreted from the lacrimal glands and what they normally do. But the big question, the big sort of mystery about tears is this question of human emotional tears. Humans appear to be the only animal that sheds tears as a response to emotional states. And so one of the huge questions is why? What is the biological purpose, and thus what is the evolutionary justification unique to our species of liquid coming out of your eyes in response to feeling emotions? As we talked about in the last episode, because this is not a settled question, there are tons of hypotheses that have been put forward over the years. We talked in the last episode about several very unlikely ones. For example, tears being a byproduct of an alleged aquatic ape past for human beings. This is almost certainly not correct because we don't put much stock in the aquatic ape hypothesis. Another one is this idea that maybe tears are somehow derived from a conditioned response of our ancient ancestors to getting smoke in their eyes at funeral pyres after they started controlling fire. There are several reasons we talked about in the last episode why that's probably not correct either. So over the next couple of episodes, we're going to be exploring a bunch more of the existing hypotheses about the evolutionary purpose of emotional tears. And I think you can sort these into three broad categories. The first being there is no purpose. Maybe they're just some kind of byproduct. The second being the purpose is intrapersonal, meaning internal to the body of the person who's crying. And then the third would be that the purpose is interpersonal, meaning that tears serve some kind of external or relational function. Now, on the score of no purpose explanations, here's a kind of surprising fact. Apparently, Charles Darwin actually believed that emotional tears served no purpose of their own, but rather were a byproduct of other purposeful adaptations, notably facial expressions and vocal expressions. In his 1872 book, The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals, Darwin wrote, quote, "The shedding of tears appears to have originated through reflex action from the spasmodic contraction of the eyelids, together perhaps with the eyeballs becoming gorged with blood during the act of screaming. Therefore, weeping probably came on rather late in the line of our descent, and this conclusion agrees with the fact that our nearest allies, the anthropomorphous apes, do not weep." So the second observation there being that the other apes that we're most closely related to, they do produce tears, of course, basal tears in their eyes and irritant tears, but they don't produce emotional tears. So that observation is correct. But I think Darwin's inference in the first half of that paragraph there is almost definitely wrong. His idea is that, well, when we get upset, we cry out with our voices, and this makes like blood rush to the face because you're screaming, and maybe all the blood sort of makes your eyes swell. And then there are also, when you're upset, there are facial muscle contractions, like involuntary reflexive contractions of things like the eyelids, and this just sort of squeezes tears out as an accidental byproduct. I don't think I can go with Darwin on this one. This sounds really wrong.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, we've already talked about the various sounds and screaming type effects that you see with other primates. I mean, if you've been to a zoo or you've been to a natural environment where primates make their home, you may have heard this. Like they can create the kind of screaming that I guess could theoretically cause the eyeballs to become gorged with blood. So yeah, that doesn't seem to have much weight to it.
Yeah, it's not that it would be impossible for contractions of the facial muscles to cause tears. I do think this may even be an explanation. I've seen this invoked as an explanation for why sometimes your eyes get teary when you yawn. Like when you yawn, that may put some kind of pressure on the lacrimal glands that causes some excessive tearing, which, you know, it leads to blurring of the vision after you're done yawning, and then you might need to wipe your eyes. Maybe a similar thing with coughing. So it's not impossible that contractions of the facial muscles could cause some tearing. It just seems like the tears being produced by the lacrimal glands during an emotional episode or something that exceeds this kind of tearing. And I don't know, most researchers who focus on this area really do think that this is not a plausible explanation. It seems pretty clear that tears are a true adaptive trait that serve their own functions and function independently from just the contractions of the facial muscles. Because another question would be like, well, okay, if this is true for humans, how come other like apes that we're closely related to don't also cry when they contract their facial muscles in emotional episodes?
Yeah. Like I say, it seems like we have more evidence to the contrary at this point.
Yeah. So it seems like tears are probably purposeful, a true adaptive trait of some kind. So the next category would be, well, maybe tears have some kind of intrapersonal purpose. They do something within the body, within the self. And there are many ways of approaching this, but to cite a characteristic example of this type of explanation, I wanted to look at the detoxification hypothesis. This is one that used to be pretty popular, but has really fallen out of favor. Historically, I think this is one of the most popular hypotheses for explaining the function of tears. It was advanced by the American biochemist William Frey in the 1980s. I think it was first published in 1985, I believe. And Frey's reasoning went like this, okay? When humans are under stress, you're having some intense emotional, bout of emotion, there is a buildup of potentially toxic substances in the blood. So, you know, think about all the different effects of stress you learn about. You know, when you're really distressed, your bloodstream floods with cortisol. You're freaked out. You can almost kind of like feel it moving through your body, or at least maybe it's an illusion, but I feel like I can. Like when I'm having a stressful experience, there's almost a somatic sensation of the spreading of this kind of like aggravating numbness.
Mm-hmm.
And Fry posited that when this happens, when your body fills up with all these potentially toxic contaminants or stress hormones, things like that, the body cleanses these excess contaminants by purging them through the tear response, with the lacrimal glands acting like kidneys do for the urinary system. So under this hypothesis, you are peeing out your eyes when you are really stressed.
Yeah, and I can understand why this idea, had some support behind it, because I mean, on one level, yes, we can look to the kidneys and the urinary system, and we can see something like this. But to your point, the feeling of all of this welling up inside of us, and then the what often feels like a release. And I have to stress, though, that when you get it, look at different accounts of weeping, and depending on the circumstances of the weeping, such as like solitary weeping versus public weeping, and then that's going to depend on the culture and the scenario in which it's taking place. You do see a lot of accounts where people say, okay, I felt better after I wept, after, you know, all this built up and then was released. So we can imagine where, like, looking at this idea of what the urinary system is doing, thinking about how we feel before and after an emotional outburst, we could easily fall in line with thinking like, the toxins building up in my body, and I am letting the toxins out. Weeping is just the body releasing the poison.
Yeah, this is having a sort of like chemical read on the feeling of catharsis people sometimes experience from weeping. Now, of course, I should say before I move on that this hypothesis does not have much support among any modern tear response researchers I was reading. It seems like the evidence for it is not good. It has been strongly pushed back against. But like you're saying, it does have this intuitive appeal because there is a widespread belief in the healing power of tears. I came across a stat that I found astounding. So I was reading an article in Time magazine by Mandy Oaklander from 2016 that was about, it interviewed several different researchers who work on the subject of tears. And it cited one analysis that looked at a bunch of articles about crying in the media over a period of more than 100 years, so going way back. And it found that 94% of them described crying as in some way good for the mind and body, or described holding back tears as bad for the mind and body. And yet, despite this gut feeling that people seem to have, I mean, I feel this way too, it's a common belief, this gut feeling that tears bring catharsis and relief and they heal you, they're good for you, they heal the mind and body. Evidence for this is apparently pretty scarce on the ground. The same article by Oaklander in Time cites a researcher named Jonathan Rotenberg, who's a professor of psychology at the University of South Florida, who studies emotion and has done work with tears. And Rotenberg says that these claims about the healing power of tears are basically a fable. There's just not much evidence that crying has strong, measurable benefits to health, mental or physical, or that it predictably brings relief or catharsis. I mean, obviously, it does bring a feeling of relief sometimes. I think we all know that from experience, but maybe not as consistently as we tend to infer.
Yeah, well, one example, because some of us might be, you know, you might wonder, well, okay, what's an example of tears not having a beneficial effect? One example that was brought up, I think this was in Holy Tears, was that if some people, when queried on this, they mentioned that if they are weeping out of a feeling of loneliness and they are doing so in a solitary setting, that they may feel worse afterwards.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. And I think that can potentially shed light on some other theories or potentially provide some possible evidence for supporting other hypotheses concerning the reason that we have tears, the function of tears in the human condition.
Right. Well, I'm going to get to this in a minute, but I think this would be one of the many things that I would interpret as possibly pointing to tears serving a primarily interpersonal function in communication and signaling between people.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You could interpret it as meaning, well, you know, that you did not feel better because the act of weeping is supposed to be communicating something to another human being.
Yeah. And it is supposed to elicit a response from somebody. Yes. But okay, so that addresses the question of like subjective feelings of relief. You know, sometimes people feel feelings of relief after crying. Sometimes people don't. But the other half of this intrapersonal interpretation, you know, does crying do something for you, to make your body better in some way, to give you some kind of internal benefit? The other question would be like, are there measurable ways that crying can be found to improve well-being, apart from just the sort of immediate aftermath where you might feel a feeling of relief or not? What about other types of measures of physical and mental well-being? Well, there was one study I came across that looked into this question, and it was by Hesdorfer Vingerhoots. That's Ad Vingerhoots, who I mentioned in the previous episode and who will come up several more times in this. And Michael R. Trimble in 2018 called Social and Psychological Consequences of Not Crying, Possible Associations with Psychopathology and Therapeutic Relevance. And basically, the authors were trying to look into the question of, okay, so what if you find people who report that they essentially never cried after a certain period in their life? They feel like they either lost the ability to cry or just at some point in their life, they just stopped crying and just don't cry anymore. Can we compare their outcomes in terms of standard measures of well-being and social functioning compared to people who do cry on a regular basis?
So they interviewed Ozzy Osbourne because no more tears.
That would have been good, but no. So they say, quote, study participants included 475 people who reportedly lost the capacity to cry and 179 normal control criers. Applied measures assessed crying, well-being, empathy, attachment, social support, and connection with others. And the authors had hypothesized that people who don't cry would have lower well-being and poor social functioning compared to people who do cry. And actually, that's not exactly what they found. So they did find some differences. So people who did not cry, on average, had fewer social connections and less social support, and also had somewhat less empathy, though, of course, that's not going to apply to everybody. And it's worth noting that those things I just mentioned aren't necessarily a result of not crying, but could maybe be causes of not crying, or could maybe be correlates with similar underlying causes. But what they did not find was indications of lower well-being. It actually found that people who cry and people who don't cry were about the same in terms of psychological measures of well-being. So, you know, no more measurable depression, anxiety, and so forth.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, studies like this don't mean that we can be sure tears serve no intrapersonal purposes. You certainly can't rule it out. Tears may well serve some kind of purpose within the self, within the body. But personally, I've become pretty well convinced while researching for these episodes that the primary adaptive purpose of emotional tears is interpersonal, meaning it's external, it's social and relational, and that tears are primarily for communicating something to and affecting the behavior of other members of our species, other people.
Yeah, I after reading through Holy Tears, I also feel like this is a very strong hypothesis in how they discuss the role of tears and religious rites and rituals. But one area that I do have questions about would be the weeping during media, like during a film or something, you know? I wonder if that is the same. Like when we weep during motion pictures, is that a communal experience or is that a personal experience? Are we actually trying to communicate something to other people viewing the film?
Oh, well, I mean, it wouldn't have to be intentional on your part. I mean, weeping is often involuntary. It's usually involuntary. So weeping at a movie, I think, could very well be not something you're trying to do because you are intentionally communicating with, say, the movie or with other people you're watching the movie with. But instead, it's a standard kind of response to empathetic connection with drama you are seeing unfold, and your brain can't really tell the difference between drama in media versus drama that would be going on with people in your life. So an adaptation that arises because it's useful with some kind of social signaling function for other people also gets hijacked when you're watching a movie about people.
That's true. So basically what we're talking about here would be, it's like the old example of the train coming at the screen and early moviegoers like freaking out, like, the train is approaching. You jump because it is something that it is stimuli that should cause you to jump and run away. But the tearful scene, the emotional scene in a motion picture, that is something that is more subtle. And we're just going to respond to it as if it is something that we should perhaps communally be responding to.
Yeah, I think the same way that a scary movie partially simulates the feeling of real danger, or that a romantic movie can cause some kind of romantic arousal. I mean, it's all like there's a vicarious interaction with what's going on in the media as if it were taking place in real life.
For a moment, I'd like to come back to something we were talking about earlier, the hypothesis that there is a purging of toxins going on during weeping, because this reminds me of another topic we've discussed in the show before, sweating. You also see some of this line of thinking being employed with sweating, sometimes with exercise, but I've seen it particularly with sauna traditions. Why do people feel better after a sauna? What is a sauna doing? And you do see this, sometimes there is this argument, well, when you're sweating, you're in the sauna, you're releasing toxins. But if memory serves, the situation is, though, when you look at like how much is shed via sweating versus how much is truly shed via urination, there's just a huge gulf between those numbers. So it doesn't really match up, but it becomes difficult to untangle this knot, you know, concerning how much is purged via sweating, how much would need to be purged to make a meaningful impact on your physiology, and how much we feel or believe we have purged having gone through the experience.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm also skeptical of the idea that this is why people feel a relief in after sweating or being in the sauna. I would expect probably it has more to do with, I don't know, the pleasurable hormones that people get after, you know, exercise or something like that, maybe endorphins or something of that nature. I don't know. I'm just spitballing there. But yeah, I would be skeptical of that. And it's funny that what you say is parallel to some arguments that are made against the detoxification hypothesis of tears, because much like with your sweating example, there's probably just not enough of the stuff in the tears to really make a major difference in the body.
Yeah.
But in the next episode, I think we're going to get more into the direct formulations of some of the main contending hypotheses for explaining the biological evolution of tears. That'll be more in the next episode. But I did want to talk about some broad observations in the idea of tears as an external or interpersonal adaptation, something that serves a relational function. And one piece of evidence that seemed somewhat convincing to me that tears serve an external and communicative purpose is that people just automatically, when they observe tears, interpret them as conveying information about the emotional states of the person who's crying. And it's not just that you look at a person who's crying and you say that person is sad. The tears themselves seem to convey very important information. And this was illustrated in some research I was reading about in a 2010 NPR article by Allison Aubrey called Teary-Eyed Evolution, Crying Serves a Purpose. And this featured an interview with a researcher named Randolph Cornelius, who was a professor of psychology at Vassar College. And I'm citing this research in particular because it came with what I thought was a very useful visual aid. So Cornelius, the psychologist, he is arguing that tears are useful because they convey information. And his research did something pretty clever. It took photographs of people who were crying and then digitally manipulated them to remove the tears. So you'd have the same face with the same expression when the person is crying, except without any tears visible in the eyes or on the cheeks. And what the study found is that people rated the same faces without tears as much more ambiguous. People consistently interpret tearful faces as sad, and they interpret them as having stronger emotional value. But people have a lot more difficulty inferring the feelings of those same faces without the tears. And so to quote from Cornelius, as cited in this article, he says, quote, "Tears also narrow the range of emotions people think the models are experiencing. Tearful people are mostly seen as experiencing emotions in the sadness family, sadness, grief, mourning, and so forth." And Rob, I really, once I looked at these images, it really hit home for me because, yeah, so it'll have two faces side by side. One is a crying face and the other is the same exact face, but photoshopped to have the tears removed. And the faces without tears, whereas there's like one in the middle of a man crying with tears rolling down his cheeks and he looks very sad. And in the picture right next to him without the tears, the same expression looks possibly kind of like smug or defiant.
Yeah, I thought kind of menacing. Like without the tears, with the tears removed, he kind of looks like he's thinking, I might just beat you up. But in the first one, it's clear this man has been watching a sad football movie and is weeping openly. There's one that you shared above this of a child, or I think it's a child, looking up. And with the tears are removed, it seems like they're perhaps just looking at a bird flying through the air. But with the tears, it's like they are looking up at a crucifixion.
Yeah, yeah. The same face without the tears could be interpreted as kind of like, I don't know, maybe concerned, but also displaying a possibly creepy kind of interest in something. at least to me, I immediately from these images can see the informational value of tears. They radically reduce the ambiguity in interpreting somebody else's facial expression. And suddenly you're not wondering, like, what is this person thinking? You immediately read them as kind of sad and vulnerable and helpless and not dangerous. Whereas the same face without the tears is like, I don't know what's up with this person.
Now, of course, this all becomes more complicated when we think about some of the exceptions to this rule that pop up, regarding why the person could be teary-eyed. You know, perhaps they have some sort of a tear gland situation going on, mm-hmm. or perhaps there is some sort of irritant in the air, something of that nature. Perhaps their sinuses are bothering them, or they just yawned. But if you're just looking at them, you're going to instantly go to that something powerful or bad has happened, and this person may need comforting.
You know, this got me thinking about another way that tears might work. This is not something that I've found advocated in any research, though somebody might have put this forward, and I haven't read about it yet. But this would be the idea that what if tears are useful as an honest signal of emotions that could have evolved as a response to the evolution of deceit? So what I'm imagining here is, you know, humans are complex social animals managing complex social relationships, and human brains are complex enough that humans can lie about what they feel, and they can lie about who and what they care about. But because tears are difficult to fake, I wonder if maybe tears evolved as an honest signal of our true motivating feelings, who and what we actually care about and how we feel about things. And thus I wonder if possibly in that way they could be adaptive because they make us more trustworthy. A person who cries about something is less likely to be lying about what their feelings about that thing are.
This, of course, makes my mind instantly go to actors, but that's kind of a whole discussion in and of itself, because you get into how is the actor summoning the tears? Are they engaging with actual tearful memories, or, you know, a deep reading of the script and so forth? But ultimately, the result is when you watch a film and the actor is summoning tears, it makes anything that's going on the screen more believable. Yeah. No matter how poor the screenplay, no matter how weird the lighting, if the actor is summoning actual tears in their performance, like that gives it a leg up.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that some people can cry on command, but most people would have a hard time doing that. Like, it's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have that chunk of onion in your handkerchief, right? Is that the old actor's trick?
Yeah, I guess so. So yeah, maybe it has something to do with the evolution of deceit. But anyway, that's just sort of like a weird thought that popped into my head. Maybe that'll connect to some of the hypotheses that we discuss in more detail in the next part. But I wanted to talk about another study that was interesting about ways that tears might be useful for interpersonal signaling and behavior manipulation. And this would be something that's not focused on conveying information that's perceived consciously, like what we were talking about with looking at tears on people's faces a minute ago. This would be operating at a subconscious level on the basis of chemical signaling or chemo signaling. This next example is also good because, from what I can tell, this is a study that led to some maybe very misleading headlines in popular coverage. But anyway, so some studies in mice have found that behaviorally relevant chemo signals in tears, so these would not be emotional tears because mice don't shed emotional tears. These would just be regular basal or reflex tears. these chemo signals in mice include pheromones that, for example, can do things like make male mice more attractive as mates, or there can be chemo signals in juvenile mice that prevent adults from attempting unwanted mating behaviors with those mice, so that they can have kind of discouraging unwanted behaviors in other mice. And picking up on that research, there were some scientists who in the year 2011 looked into whether there could be similar chemo signals in human tears. And so this led to a study by Shani Gelstein et al. Published in Science called Human Tears Contain a Chemo Signal. Now, I want to be clear that I'm often kind of skeptical about, I'm not quite sure why this is, but I think maybe because there have been a few studies along these lines that have later turned out to be not well-founded, but I'm kind of skeptical about studies finding big macro behavioral effects of imperceptible smells and stuff in humans, so I would definitely want this verified by a good bit of independent replication. But if the finding of the study is correct, what it found is that emotional tears in humans tend to contain chemicals that change the behavior of adults, especially adult men, possibly making them less aggressive and less likely to experience sexual arousal, maybe making them more likely to, say, provide care behaviors. The study measured this by having people smell tears that were from human donors, and they found that tears that were produced by women who were experiencing negative emotions, when men sniffed those tears, they had reduced levels of testosterone, and they had reduced self-rated sexual arousal and reduced physiological measures of arousal. And so what some headlines did with this is basically they went with like the sexual angle and said that, oh yeah, tears will make you less attractive.
Yeah, that feels like a very specific misread of what they're trying to say here.
Right, right. So actually, I was reading, there was a section that covered this in that article by Mandy Oaklander that I mentioned a minute ago, and it actually went back and interviewed one of the authors of that study in Science, Noam Sobel, who said, okay, yeah, it really generated some sort of misleading headlines that had the wrong takeaway from it. Because even though they did find that, at least within this one study, emotional tears lowered sexual arousal in men, he thinks that the correct interpretation of this finding is that the chemo signals in this may be reducing aggression, and that men's tears may also have the same effect as women's tears. And so the main takeaway would not be that like tears are unattractive. It would be that like tears, if this finding is correct, serve to sort of like put other biological drives on hold and sort of put the men who smell them into a kind of caregiving mode.
Now, one possible issue that this raises for me, though, is that tears are also shed in rage. You know, so sure. One can easily imagine a scenario where if one warrior is coming at another, and one warrior their eyes are streaming with tears and their face is snarling like a beast and they're coming at you with battle axe. Does that mean the other warrior is going to suddenly let their guard down and have this emotional outpouring for the other warrior because tears are present? Like that doesn't really match up for me.
No. And it, if it does work this way, it certainly wouldn't be that deterministic. It would just be an influence, not like a, you know, overriding every other consideration a person could have.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I would say that you can imagine even in a context of people of you know, warriors and killers, it seems harder to enact violence maybe on somebody who is crying. Like that crying does serve pretty often to sort of neutralize aggression.
Yeah, but then again, I guess we have to remember that it does not occur in a vacuum. Like we have the human facial communication array, we have body posture. And you know, that is also augmented by use or non-use of tools and weapons. Like there are a number of other signals that would be in place in addition to the tears, even if the tears had this ability to augment what's going on with our facial features.
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly processing all kinds of signals and information, tears would be one input among many. You know, they might have an influence in one way, but, you know, you might be able to ignore that influence if you've got strong motivations.
In all of this, I can't help but be reminded of an old Halloween Disney cartoon, perhaps you've seen it, in which there is a rampaging gorilla, and Donald Duck is there, and the Huey, Dewey, and Louie are there, and they're running around being chased by this gorilla. They're able to eventually subdue the gorilla using tear gas. Tear gas, of course, does not have an emotional context. It is an irritant. But in this cartoon, when the tear gas reaches the eyes of both Duck and Ape, it produces tears that are then instantly emotional tears.
Confusing, so, the categories, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there's some wonderful category confusion there.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So anyway, I'm not sure what I think about the idea of tears as chemo signals, though I do feel pretty well convinced that they're some kind of signal, and it might be a signal of the more straightforward kind that we were talking about before, where observing them has some pretty reliable cognitive effects. People see the tears and react in a certain way, and there are some indications also that that tears may be emotional tears may be specially designed to be seen. Like I was reading in one of these articles, a finding that has alleged that emotional tears tend to contain higher protein content than just like basal or reflex tears. Though that I'm not sure how well that finding holds up, because I might have read that that had been contradicted as well. But if that is the case, one hypothesized explanation for that is that the additional protein content of the tears causes them to be thicker, meaning that they take longer to roll down the cheek. So emotional tears, if this is true, would be more visible than just, say, like your eyes overflowing with tears because they're irritated. Those thinner tears might just sort of wash away, whereas the thicker emotional tears hang on the cheek and sort of stick to your skin, and other people can see them more easily.
Now, this is very interesting because it brings to mind two different things. One, what happens when there is a makeup of some sort in place on the face? And you can see this, you know, across the spectrum, any kind of makeup that might be worn on the face, especially for some sort of ritual scenario. And then if there's weeping, it has the potential to make the tears all the more apparent. Mm-hmm. This also reminds me of something I was reading in Holy Tears. Apparently, there have been accounts there are various accounts of weeping blood in cultures, and there's this possibility that there are some mourners that have been reported to have engaged in rituals in ancient Turkey, where they would score their faces during the ritual or before the ritual, and anyway, the result would be that you would have blood and tears mixed together, sort of augmenting the tears with blood. And or the reverse, augmenting the blood with tears, causing this increased flow.
Well, yeah, and playing on the intuition that tears are meaningful, and they're meaningful if they are seen. They're meant to be visually seen.
And of course, the one way to hide them is you do your crying in the rain, right? Like in the Everly Brothers song.
Oh, okay. You know, there's one observation that I came across that struck me as really interesting. This was not from a scientific study. I actually just heard this in a video I was watching. So Vox has a video series called Glad You Asked that's hosted by somebody named Joss Fong. And they had an episode on tears. And there was a part in the episode where somebody observed that tears are the only body fluid that doesn't tend to gross other people out. And that struck me as really interesting. So the idea of getting somebody else's urine or feces, blood, sweat, spit, mucus, etc., any of that, getting any of that on you, most of the time people would find all of these options disgusting. The suggestion here is that tears are the only fluid secreted by the body that doesn't usually provoke a disgust reaction in others. And I don't know of any empirical research to back up this observation. It might exist, but it does ring true to me, and it strikes me as notable.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's hard to reflect on any actual experience with that. I feel like any time that I've gotten, say, my son's tears on me, it's almost always been, if they're emotional tears, then there's going to be mucus as well, you know?
Right.
So in that case, it's like, yeah, I probably need to change shirts.
Once you're a parent, you get all kinds of fluids on you. And that just, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. From urine and everything else. But I guess with the tears, I can understand that. Yeah, I can certainly match it, especially when I think about the time that he shot tears into my mouth.
Oh, yeah.
By virtue of his tear duct situation at the time. Yeah, I was not it was more interesting as opposed to a gross out moment. I also was looking around because I was thinking, well, maybe there's some notable exception in human culture. And I thought I had some, like some flag came up in my memory of some faint example of something where maybe tears had some sort of a negative connotation, maybe involved with, say, like, you know, the purging of bodily energies or the imbalance of energies. But I couldn't find anything. Maybe I'll find something and we'll share it in the future. But it does seem to be pretty universal. And even then, it would not, I don't know if it would necessarily be that the tears themselves have any kind of unclean aspect to them. It would be something about like the deeper body or the or some sort of a alleged energy system of the body. In the same way, whereas if you might, and I'm not saying this is fair, but if you were judgmental of somebody for crying during Space Jam, an adult crying during Space Jam, you might argue that they shouldn't have done so, or that they didn't have proper emotional reason to do so. But you wouldn't think anything less of the actual substance of their tears. Like, keep those Space Jam tears away from me. Do not let them soil my body.
I wouldn't trust anybody who did not cry during Space Jam.
There you go. Maybe they're the holiest tears of all.
Yeah.
As long as we're off the subject and reaching the end of the podcast, what do you make of old Pinhead saying, you know, no tears, it's a waste of good suffering? I always felt that
save your tears.
Yeah, I always felt like that was a bit off brand. Like, what are you expecting to happen? Like, I thought pain and suffering was your whole bag, but suddenly, like, crying's not allowed.
Yeah, at what point does he think it's okay for the tears to begin?
Yeah, seems kind of close-minded of Pinhead.
Well, it is interesting that in the context of the movie, these would be, if it's Hellraiser, these would be anticipatory tears, right? Tears that are in response to terror at the idea of suffering yet to come.
Yeah.
And yet there are some people who have put forward models of emotional tears that sort of say the opposite, that say tears are a sort of step down signal. I'm not sure I'm convinced by this, actually, but it at least has been alleged.
I could imagine a scenario where, if you're going to think long and hard about the Cenobites of Clive Barker's Hellraiser, you could say, well, they're all about actual senses of pleasure and pain, and therefore the emotional context of pleasure and pain might be completely lost on them. Because, they're all about, like, sticking hooks in things and so forth. And and the tightening of leather, not so much about anticipating the pain or reflecting on the pain. So, I don't know. Now I'm backtracking. Maybe it is totally on brand. But maybe it would have been more impactful if Pinhead had been said something like just to express that he doesn't even understand what's happening. What are you doing? Why is there liquid coming out of your face? Liquid shouldn't be coming out of your body unless it is a response to direct physical stimuli.
Since I mentioned it, I figured I might as well explain the idea of the sort of step down theory of tears. So I was reading about this in an article in the Washington Post from April 2016 by Miri Kim called The Science of a Good Cry. And this involved an interview with an emeritus professor of psychology at Temple University named Jay Efron, who had advocated what was called in this article a two-stage theory of emotional tears, which would be kind of similar to the two-stage theory of laughter, which posits that maybe laughter functions when tension is first raised by the setup of a joke and then suddenly lowered by the punchlines that step down to the lower level of tension under this theory that causes the laughter as the result of a joke. The idea here is that maybe crying works in a similar fashion. So I want to read a quote from this article that's explaining a friend's view here. Quote, people experience a crying fit when something happens to first spark high anxiety or distress, followed by a moment of recalibration or release. For instance, a child that loses his mother at the grocery store begins by frantically searching for her, getting more and more worried as he scans the aisles. Suddenly, he hears her call his name from behind, sees her comforting face, and promptly bursts into tears. And it goes on to explain how this could maybe also work for things that appear to be tears of joy. Maybe like while you're planning a wedding for your child, you know, there's sort of a high anxiety, high stress preparation stage. But then during the ceremony itself, it's kind of like everything is culminated and then there's a release of tension and then you cry. So according to this this hypothesis here, emotional tears would occur not really at the onset of distress, but at the onset of relief from distress. I'm not sure how convinced I am by this. I'm not sure how it lines up with actual instances of crying, but it does seem to be somewhat corroborated, at least by what parts of the nervous system seem to be activated. Like crying does seem to be more associated with activation of the parasympathetic nervous system as opposed to the sympathetic nervous system. So the sympathetic nervous system is what's usually associated with high stress conditions, fight or flight, goosebumps, all that kind of thing. And then usually when you're done with a sympathetic nervous system response, you know, the high stress has subsided, you shift back down into activation of the parasympathetic nervous system, which is often known as the relax and restore system or the rest and digest system. It's the stuff that's normal involuntary activities of the body that are happening when you're not in a state of heightened stress or anxiety. And this is the system that crying seems to be more associated with. So that would be an interesting indication in favor of this two-stage emotional tear theory. But still, I'm not sure how correctly the theory rings just with experience of when crying happens and how it happens.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes so complex when you start trying to tease apart emotional and physical responses to complex stimuli that is some kind of thing that Pinhead's not going to understand.
Right.
It's a tangled knot of human emotion.
Oh, we did get set off on that whole thing by Pinhead, didn't we?
We did. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and close out this part two of our look at tears. We are going to come back with part three, and I'm excited to get into some of the mythological and religious stuff a bit more in that one. But there will be a short gap. We have a special interview episode that we're excited about that's going to air Tuesday. And then the following Thursday, we should be back with Tears Part Three.
If all goes according to plan.
Yeah. If it doesn't, that means something changed.
There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Yes. We'll have to get into that. What's with all the teeth gnashing? I don't know. Maybe we'll get into that in part three.
What does gnashing mean? What is what is it to gnash? To bite?
To like grind your teeth?
Grind?
I was just imagining it. Yeah, just kind of like weeping and just, I don't know. So perhaps we should explore that. Maybe there's some legs to that question.
Experts on gnashing, right in.
Yeah. All right. If you want to check out other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you'll find them all on the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. We have core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Artifact on Wednesday, Listener Mail on Monday, Weird House Cinema on Friday. That's when we just kick back and discuss a weird movie. And then on the weekend, we have a rerun of a core episode.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
The 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, is finally here.
With the first pick in the NFL Draft.
Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit.
They're looking to get a guy that they believe can change the game.
With NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon and on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.